Good morning, sir. What is your name, sir?
Good morning, sir. My name is Frederick Ramon Jr., 98636.
Okay, Mr. Ramon, the Honorable Mr. Gowanus will be chairing your hearing at this time, sir.
Is that mine?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Oh, that's yours, Mr. Gowanus?
Yes, sir.
You have Mr. Ramon?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm sorry, Mr. The Honorable Mr. Johnson will be chairing your hearing. I'm sorry, sir.
Thank you.
Sir, for the record, could you just state your name and your ADC number for us again?
Frederick Ramon Jr., 98636.
Okay, you give me a seat. You want to see it?
Just here.
May I approach?
Yes.
We had a letter come in over the weekend, and it's from Mr. Ramon's sister, who would like to be on the phone, and her number's right there, and I have a copy for each of you. Call.
Thank you.
Because I really tried to get on the phone. There's several people here for Mr. Ramon. Is there Emily Weiss? Okay, it's all at the council. Everybody's with the council thing, with the exception of Ms. Sherry Shelton.
Sherry Shelton should be for Donald Shelton.
It should be who?
For Donald Shelton. That's a different.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, this is Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. It's our understanding that you wish to participate in the hearing for Mr. Ramon this morning. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
If you would hold on, the chair of the panel will call on you at the appropriate time, ma'am.
Okay.
Ms. Valencia?
Yes.
Okay, so what we're going to do is that we're going to start the hearing. We're going to go ahead and read in some information. There are some counsel here to represent Mr. Ramon. He's here with us on the phone by video conference. We'll get some information from him, and then we'll be coming back to you to get some information from you. So if you would just stay on the line and remain silent if possible, if you could mute your phone, that would certainly assist us.
Okay.
Who's all going to be speaking for Mr. Ramon?
Possibly all of us. We're going to let the board speak with Mr. Ramon first.
Okay.
And two law students who are representing him, Kyle Pinnable and Emily Weiss, will speak next. Followed by social work student Kennedy, and then the woman, Rebecca, on the phone.
Okay.
But we'd like the board to speak with Mr. Ramon.
Well, this is a parole hearing for Mr. Ramon. Mr. Ramon, I'm going to introduce you to the board. We haven't had a chance to talk to you as of this point, but I am going to introduce you to the board members that are here. that will be conducting your hearing today, sir. To my far right is the Honorable Gail Rittenhouse. Next to her is the Honorable Luis Quinones. Sir, in the middle is Dr. C.T. Wright. He is our board chair. Sir, my name is Michael Johnson. I am going to be acting as your panel chair today. And, sir, we also have with us, to my far left right here, is Mr. David Neal, who is also a board member that we have here. So this is a parole hearing for Mr. Ramon. Sir, I'm going to start out and just ask you if you would give us a little bit of the information, reference the crime that you're actually here for in your own words, if you would kind of state to the board exactly what occurred.
Okay, good morning, and I appreciate you guys being here. My name is Trey Ramon. I've committed a felony first degree murder in 1992. I've been locked up for 25 and a half years, and I had a couple armed robberies that occurred in 1992 as a juvenile, 50 years old, and there was two incidents. One in the first one was a Silver K armed robbery that had a felony first degree murder, and the second one was a Texaco with armed robbery, and there was a couple other charges for car theft.
So what happened in the actual armed robbery, sir?
The armed robbery was okay. I had two car partners that were going to go do a beer run, and they shot the clerk and killed him, and which was Mr. Alan Walters. That I feel very bad that somebody lost their life over some teenagers that were trying to steal beer.
And sir, your other defenders, do you know what happened with them?
All three of us got 25 life. I was 15. My co-defendant, the memory of them, was 15, and Mr. Rogers was 19.
Okay. And so, since you've been incarcerated, sir, what have you done to make any changes in your sentencing? Since you've been incarcerated, to change your personality or?
I'm pretty sure that you guys have my tickets over the years. When I came in as a youngster, I got my GED. In the first 6-7 months that I was incarcerated, I got my GED. Then I turned 18, I went to the adult yard, and I started teaching some GED to my fellow inmates. After that, I've taken NA classes, AA classes. I've been certified in Lacey Mendez State, Arizona. I also custodial maintenance classes that I got certified from Arizona Western College. I learned how to sew at a factory in East Union, Florence, where we're making bedding for hospitals, the population for mattresses in here for Arizona, and duffel bags, belts, and other stuff for the state of Arizona.
Okay, sir. So if you were released, I see that you do have release packet and some information, but I'd like to hear in your own words, what is it that if you were released or paroled, what would you do?
Well, I would like to go out there and get a job, be a productive member of society, live with my sister, and get to be around my family and just work. But I have 2.5 years to find various jobs that, I got people out there that, like my sister, she's on the phone, that her husband works at a nursery. I would like to go out there and try to get a job there, go to college, do something productive,
And do you have other family here, sir, in your plans?
Yes, I have three sisters, one daughter, and my aunt and my niece and nephews to go out there to be part of their life, you know?
And so out of those that you have there, sir, so since you've been incarcerated, have you had visitors from your family, sir?
Yes, my sister's on the phone, therapy visit, my mom visited for many years, my other sister, Victor Ramon's dad, when it's come, she had a husband that's been in prison, so she's just let me take care of me, send money or whatever, but now that he's out, she's going to try to come and visit me as well.
Okay, sir, I want to see at this time if the board has any additional questions for you before we go to your counsel. Mr. Kenyons.
Yeah, just a quick follow-up. Mr. Ramon?
Yes, sir.
You talked about plans for when hopefully you'll come out of the prison system someday. What exactly would you like to do?
Well, once I get a job, and once I get a job, I would also like to go to college. I'm Native American, so my Tony Arthur tribe would, grab me money to do, try to get, go to college and try to further educate myself to try to get a good trade.
I guess what I'm asking is, have you decided on what a good trade is? Like, do you have an interest?
Well, me being in prison for 26 years, I would just like to take it one step at a time and see what options I have as far as with my tribe. Because I can tell you one thing, but I don't know how the funding is going to go from them.
Thank you. I will say, I just want to commend you. It sounds like that you have pursued education since you've been inside the correction system this whole time. Do you enjoy reading?
Yes, sir. I like reading and helping other people, like teaching. Like when I taught GED, I got more satisfaction of teaching people that didn't have education as my fellow inmates. As far as when they graduated, it made me feel a lot better because I know that some of these guys have been to like 7th, 8th grade and never really, just like I was. I made it to 9th grade and came to prison, but when I taught them, I think it was more fulfilling for me to teach them than it was for myself to graduate, you know?
Thank you, sir. Thank you for being honest with me.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
The board has any additional questions at this time? Seeing none, then I'm going to go to your counsel at this time, sir, to go ahead and get some information, and I know you already know the process.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Catherine Pazaskis from the ASU Public Condition Clinic. I just wanted to clarify a couple of points before I pass it to Kyle Prindle, who is a third-year law student at ASU Law School. If Mr. Ramon is paroled today, he will go to a consecutive term. I know there was some confusion at the last hearing about that. We were able to clarify that point between the last hearing and today. It is a 3.5-year sentence, of which I believe he would serve 2/3 if he has good time. So he may only have to serve 2/3 of that if he has good time, but he does have some additional time to serve. Before he's ever released into the community, he would have to come back before this board to determine, specific housing and employment and things like that at that time. However, he does have, we've spoken with him a lot over the past several months. He does have a plan for housing right now, today. That could change in 3.5 years. But he does plan to live with his sister, Rebecca, who's on the phone. And if that didn't work out, we also had looked into a halfway house for him called Old Pueblo, which is in Tucson. But like I said, things could change within that period of time. Mr. Quinones, you had asked about a skill. We've talked with Freddie a lot about cooking. So he works in the kitchen right now. And he loves to cook, prepare meals, and plan meals for people. And he's talked about possibly trying to go to school to do that type of thing, to become a cook. So that's something that I wanted to bring up that we've talked with him about over the past several months.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Now I'll pass it to Kyle Prindle.
Kyle Pernigal, and I'm a third-year law student at the Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law. I'm certified to appear before you under Arizona Supreme Court Rule 38D. I've been with the Post-Conviction Clinic for close to a year now, and I've been reviewing case law and scientific research on juvenile offenders specifically and adolescent brain development for the past several months. Immaturity in our youth has always been apparent. However, we now have scientific evidence that children are physiologically not equipped nor as capable as adults to deal with stress and make sound decisions that adequately weigh risk versus reward. Numerous studies and modern brain technology has resulted in a vast increase in our knowledge of the adolescent brain. The American Medical Association and the American Academy of Child Adolescent Psychiatry conducted a neutral study and submitted a brief to the United States Supreme Court in a case called Miller v. Alabama, highlighting the relevant scientific findings of medical, psychiatric, and psychological research using multiple perspectives, which included scientists, researchers, and medical professionals. The medical professionals and associations have found that the adolescent ability to exhibit adult levels of judgment and control is limited and unreliable. For adolescents, behavioral control, regulation of emotional response and impulsivity, judgment, and decision-making are all structurally immature during adolescence. Adolescents simply are not equipped with the same faculties or tools, for lack of a better word, as adults to ensure sound decision-making. Structural differences in an adolescent brain and increased susceptibility to risk-taking behavior results in a juvenile being scientifically less culpable than an adult. A child's immaturity has been known and addressed in many facets of society. This is seen with age restrictions corresponding to drinking, owning firearms, entering the military, and renting a car. This consideration is now moved to juvenile offenders as well. It is within this context that Freddie must be evaluated. In the past 12 years, four significant cases have been decided by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has found that the Eighth Amendment prohibits certain punishments for juveniles that would otherwise be permissible for adult offenders. These four cases and their decisions are derivative of the social science research, psychology, and brain science that was just discussed. They demonstrate that the adolescent brain is fundamentally different than that of an adult, and therefore children are less deserving of the most severe punishments. In this direction, the Supreme Court has found that the death penalty, life without parole sentences for juvenile offenders in non-homicide cases, and now mandatory life without parole sentences for all juvenile offenders are unconstitutional. In light of breakthroughs in adolescent brain research, the importance of consideration can be seen by the court's wording. They say that the appropriate occasions for sentencing juveniles to the harshest possible penalty will be uncommon. Clarifying situations where this is acceptable will be very rare. The court states that absent a finding that rehabilitation is possible, it is impossible, sentencing a juvenile offender to life without parole is unconstitutional because children are less culpable than adults. As a juvenile offender, Frederick Ramon was less culpable than that of an adult offender and had a greater capacity for change and rehabilitation. Fortunately, Freddie was not sentenced to natural life and has the opportunity to appear before this board. Freddie has already served 26 years. This man has been in prison longer than I've been alive. This is no longer the 15-year-old boy that was placed behind bars, but someone who is rehabilitated and matured into a man. The board must consider the lessened culpability that is derivative of youth, and how Freddie has demonstrably transformed into a mature adult man that has proven himself capable of sustaining positive change. Thank you, and I can answer any questions that I might.
I just have one question, then I'll see if the board have any additional questions, because I know there's a lot of the statement in there that juvenile can't be sentenced to life without parole, but he wasn't sentenced with life without parole. But my question is that he committed another crime while he was incarcerated in prison, in which he's going to be paroled to his next consecutive sentence as an adult. So Can you just kind of tell me how that relies to him being a juvenile as an adult? Because most of it, basically, about the unfairness is, you said that he has a greater capacity of not, he didn't use the word reoffending, but I thought that's kind of the way that you were going with that. Can you kind of explain that?
Well, we do have a reoffense that occurred in prison.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not entirely informed on the actual specifics, but I think it is important to note that the fact that he was impressionable and was culpable as a juvenile offender at the time of the original crime is a condition that he was faced with at the beginning of his sentence itself. Going into prison and being convicted at the age of 15, the development in his brain was not complete until later in life. But the specifics of that.
Board members, Joey Dornby for Mr. Ramon. As Kyle stated, Mr. Ramon came into prison at age 15. The offense that Mr. Johnson is referring to is a drug offense that occurred in 1998, which would have made him roughly 21, 22 years old. What the American Medical Association, what, you know, psychologists all over the country have found is that the adolescent brain isn't restricted to an age, like we put an age on adulthood legally of 18 years, right? You become an adult when you're 18 years old legally. That's starting to change. Brain science is showing that areas of your brain, your prefrontal cortex, which is in charge of making sound decision making, is not fully developed in many people until the mid to late 20s. So when we're talking about 1998, we're still talking about a 21, 22 year old kid who never had, you know, a stable home environment, didn't have a father figure, and found himself, you know, in a prison population as a very vulnerable person. And I think that he didn't have an extensive drug or alcohol record before he was incarcerated. And I think part of the reason that he turned to that was just a coping mechanism as a young person trying to, you know, survive in a fairly hostile environment.
What are the additional questions? Okay, thank you, sir.
Yes.
Good morning, board members. My name is Emily Weiss. I am a third-year law student at the Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law at ASU, and I am certified to appear before you as a law student under Supreme Court Rule 30AD. I have worked for the past semester with the post-conviction clinic, and I am here to present Freddie's prison record. As my colleagues have stated, Freddie has been in prison since he was 15. He was in prison in 1992, and like my colleague Kyle, he's also been in prison longer than I have been alive. Most of his citations prior to his sobriety in 2011 are almost entirely related to drugs. After getting clean and attending AA and NA meetings, Freddie's record has been almost entirely pristine for 6 years. There's an April 2017 cite for an inappropriate relationship with a guard. This is a close, non-sexual friendship between Freddie and another guard. Freddie viewed this guard as a colleague and a friend rather than maintaining the distance appropriate for an inmate guard relationship. They were close friends and worked in the kitchen together. The staff member no longer works at the prison, and Freddie does not have contact with her. He recognizes the friendship was inappropriate due to circumstance, but this relationship still shows Freddie is ready to form friendships with mature adults. This record shows that Freddie is in fact rehabilitated. When Freddie entered prison, he started using drugs as a coping mechanism in order to survive prison as a child. But once he got sober, his entire record turned around. Freddie is now a responsible and mature adult. Moving on to his work, Freddie works hard and is highly motivated to learn. For the past few years, Freddie has worked about 80 hours a week in the kitchen. Freddie loves to cook and wants to pursue that avenue when he eventually gets released, if possible. Freddie has also worked for several years as a porter, a trusted position in the prison. He's had a work assignment and worked about 60 hours a week, almost every week, since 2014. As far as programming goes, Freddie has completed multiple substance abuse education courses. He completed one in May of 2000, another called Thinking Straight in July of 2004, and a third one in June of 2016. Each involved group meetings and an essay in which participants wrote about what they had learned and how they had grown. He recognizes that this is an ongoing thing and he will have to deal with this for the rest of his life. Education. Freddie obtained his GED in 1993, as he stated. He completed another functional literacy program in 2007 as part of his GED recertification when the prison lost the record of his GED. He has always pursued education at every turn. He has completed multiple vocational certificates, as he said, cement finishing in 2004, multiple automotive technician courses in 2009 and 2011. He passed those with flying colors. And the driving course in 2011. Freddie attempted to complete small business management courses in 2015 and some college-level psychology courses, but the professor stopped showing up for the completion of the course, and so he was unable to obtain certification. He looks forward to taking the re-entry courses, but he must wait until he has a year before consideration for release before he can enter them. He loves to educate himself, takes every opportunity he can to take classes and learn new things, and we know he will continue to do so throughout the rest of his life. Freddie also recognizes the work necessary to maintain his sobriety and will continue to take full advantage of the resources available to him. Earlier in this process, as my colleagues have stated, there was some confusion as to whether or not Freddie was eligible to be paroled to the streets. When we informed him that he would instead be paroled to his next sentence, he took the news with maturity and grace. Freddie is completely focused on what he needs to do to be able to eventually return to society as a mature adult. My colleague Kyle has told you about the standards required for parole. Freddie has clearly met those standards. He has engaged in a wide variety of programming work and has shown maturity and rehabilitation throughout his sobriety. Are there any questions from the board?
Board have any questions? Okay, thank you.
If that's the case, I'll pass it to Kennedy.
Good morning, members of the board. My name is Kennedy Arnold, and I'm here today on behalf of the Arizona Justice Project's reentry team. In 2016, the Arizona Justice Project partnered with Arizona State University's School of Social Work, utilizing the skills and expertise of master's and PhD level social workers to assist individuals transitioning back into the community following a significant prison sentence. The reentry team is governed under the clinical supervision of Dr. Jose Ashford, the director of the Office of Forensic Social Work at ASU. As a member of this team, I personally have experience working in a variety of agencies in the field of substance abuse, child safety, victim advocacy, as well as housing and employment support. I have also worked with the United States Federal Probation Reentry Team, which focuses on reducing recidivism through assisting clients in finding stable housing and employment in the community after a prison sentence. The Arizona Justice Project's Reentry Team's mission is to reduce recidivism through assistance and support with navigating vital community resources such as housing, employment, substance abuse, mental health services, healthcare, rebuilding relationships, and the forming of new pro-social supports outside of prison. For those who have served many years in prison, ensuring that the necessary services, supports, and resources are in place both pre- and post-release is crucial and can directly relate to whether or not these individuals will reoffend. The Arizona Justice Project's partnership with ASU School of Social Work through the establishment of the reentry team demonstrates our professional commitment as social workers to promote offender rehabilitation while still maintaining public safety. Our work with Mr. Ramone began after careful review of his demonstrated rehabilitation inside the Department of Corrections. Mr. Ramone committed offenses as a juvenile and has utilized the past 26 years to further his education, work toward and maintain sobriety, participate in various work programs, and engage in therapeutic courses offered on substance abuse and mental health. He has taken every opportunity given to him by the Department of Corrections to better himself as a human being in the prison setting. Given the opportunity of parole today, Mr. Ramone would still have to serve an additional 3.5 years in prison. This time will be used as a transitionary period to prepare for his release into the community with continued support and guidance of both the Arizona Justice Project and the reentry team. The reentry team has worked directly with Mr. Ramone and has identified that his release plan consists of continued substance abuse treatment, mental health services, resume building, employment seeking, housing support, access to healthcare, and navigating life outside of prison walls. In addition to these mainstream resources, the Reentry Team has coordinated directly with the Tohono O'odham Nation, and as a Nation member, Mr. Ramon would have access to the mental health and substance abuse services outlined in the letter from the tribe that you have each received today. These services include, but are not limited to, one-on-one therapy, group therapy, and an intensive outpatient substance abuse treatment program. Mr. Ramon could simultaneously engage in both mainstream and tribal services, and the Reentry Team acknowledges that educating him on all of his options for support are crucial in ensuring his success if granted this opportunity today. In respect to housing, while Mr. Ramon will not actually be paroled to the streets today, the Reentry Team recognizes that preparing for this future is critical. We have identified a halfway house called Old Pueblo, located in Tucson, Arizona. Old Pueblo specializes in treating substance abuse and offers permanent supportive housing along with long-term case management services to ensure that individuals are successful. We recognize and respect that the decision you make today is an important one, and I can assure you that as a team, we have put the time and careful consideration into the creation of Mr. Ramon's release plan. As a part of the release plan, we have spoken directly to several members of Freddie's family, including his daughter Chloe and two of his sisters. Letters from family members have been submitted to the board in support of Freddie's release. Freddie's family indicates that they are all there to support him in any way that they can, and that he has a home to go to when released. I would like to take the opportunity to read a brief statement from Freddie's daughter, Chloe, that encapsulates the type of familial relationship Freddie has maintained and that will be available to him if and when he is released from prison. So this is from his daughter, Chloe. Dear Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, I am writing on behalf of Frederick Ramon. My name is Chloe Clark and I am Freddie's daughter. Me and my father have a very special relationship. I grew up without a father because mine passed away when I was just 6 years old. Freddie has been there for me through thick and thin, and I have been very grateful for that. Even though he has not been able to physically be there for me, he made sure I had everything I needed plus more. I am blessed to be able to call him my father because honestly, going through my teen life would have been very difficult without a father figure to look up to, and he's exactly that. I know my father will do anything and everything for me to make sure I'm all right and to make sure I have what I need. I couldn't ask for a better father, to be honest with you. He's such a beautiful soul and I look up to him so much. He's done so much good in prison, like getting his GED and helping others with getting theirs, and I just think that's absolutely amazing. He's taught me so much and has given me so much confidence because of the love and support he's given me his whole life. He's helped me through a lot of things that have happened to me in my life, and he's never tried to replace my dad, which I think is great. He was there for me when I lost my dad, then my cousin, and he was there for me when I've been stressing my junior year, and I would like him to be there when I graduate. He's the only parent I have. He's given me so much hope for life, and he's taught me how to love this world and most importantly, love myself. Even though he's been locked up most of his life, he's still able to be the father of the year every single year. If I cry, he's there. If I'm mad, he's there to make me laugh with his goofy laugh and smile. And when I would go to visits, he paid most of his attention to me and treated me like a princess, his princess. It was hard to see him as my father for a while, but the first day I called him Dad and his face glowed up with the biggest smile, I knew that he truly is like my father. Not a stepfather, not my biological father, but just my father. Someone who I know will always protect me and love me and make sure these little boys don't break his baby's heart. I love him from the moon and back, and I just hope one of these days I will be able to be with him physically and we can do what fathers and daughters do, such as making breakfast, going to the park, going shopping, and just having the connection that we have, but so much stronger. I love you, Dad. I love you so much. Chloe Clark. So, in closing, we are dedicated as professional social workers to ensuring Mr. Ramon's success. We are devoted to assisting him with all the support he needs to ensure that he will be a productive member of society while living a sober lifestyle free of criminal activity when he is released from prison. If you have any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer them now.
The board have any questions? Okay.
Thank you.
We have one additional speaker on the phone, Rebecca.
And then are you going to wrap it? Are you going to be speaking?
I'll wrap it up.
Mr. Valencia?
Yes.
Okay, if you could go ahead and state your name and give the board any information that you'd like the board to have at this time.
Sure. My name is Rebecca Valencia, and I am Fred Ramon's younger sister. And I just wanted you guys to know that he does have a lot of support out here. He has several nieces and nephews, and, you know, as he stated, sisters as well. I've been at the same household for the last 14 years. I'm a very stable person. I work for the school district. He's more than welcome to stay in my home. We don't have a big home, but he always has somewhere to go. I can support him financially for a while if he's not able to find a job right away. We are trying to see if we can get him in with my husband over where he works, but unfortunately they won't hire anybody unless it's something that's coming up sooner. So closer hit is his release, it'll be a lot easier for us to do that process as far as getting him to appointments and making sure he's going where he needs to go, therapy, whatever he needs, we will be here for him. He's been gone for so many years. I was probably 7 or 8 when he went away to prison, and the only relationship that I've got to know him is through a prison. And he is a really wonderful person to be around. He knows how to speak to a person depending on what the situation is for advice and how to, you know, to cheer people up. He's been there for my kids through, you know, writing letters, phone calls, visitations when we're able. But he does have a lot of support out here. We're rooting for him, and we want to make sure that he knows that we will not let him fail out here.
Okay, Ms. Valencia, I don't know if the board has any questions of you.
Sure.
Okay, Ms. Valencia, the board doesn't have any questions of you. We're going to continue on with the hearing. I'm going to ask you to, you're more than welcome if you would like to just remain on the line until we conclude the hearing.
Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, may I just ask the lawyer's question? The lawyer's already up here. May I just ask one question or legal team? And my question is there any legal action pending at this time? And the reason I raised that question back in 2010, I do take note, you know, that the Court of Appeals, the Arizona State Court of Appeals, remanded this back to the lower courts. And is there anything pending legally at this time as it relates to Mr. Ramon?
No, there's not.
Okay. So, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, members of the board. Again, my name is Joey Dormady, and I'm an attorney in the post-conviction clinic at ASU Law. I'm appearing on behalf of Freddie Ramon, who is seeking parole again under 31412B so that he can begin serving his 3.5-year consecutive sentence. As we've heard extensively today, Freddie entered state custody when he's a 15-year-old child and has remained incarcerated for over 26 years now. As my colleague Kyle mentioned, the past decade plus of United States Supreme Court precedent has recognized that children that commit crimes must be treated differently for the purposes of sentencing because kids, through age-specific physiological immaturities associated with the process of human brain development, have been scientifically proven to be less culpable for their actions than adult offenders. Now, the corollary to this scientific and legal finding is that child offenders are also more capable of positive growth and rehabilitation. And as we've heard from multiple people today, Freddie, now a mature 41-year-old man, embodies that capacity for change. Through hard work and support and dedication of his family, Freddie has transformed himself from a troubled follower that entered state custody in 1992 into a man that is deserving of the opportunity to prove that he will be a law-abiding, productive member of our society when he returns before this board, if granted parole today, in 2.5 to 3.5 years. For the majority of his confinement, Freddie has engaged himself in all the prison programming, as we've heard, that has been available to him, while also taking it upon himself to educate himself. He has dedicated himself to his sobriety and has been clean for over 6 years. He has consistently been employed in prison, learning trades and occupying many positions of trust that require minimum guard supervision. And as we heard from Freddie himself, Freddie has taken it upon himself to mentor his fellow inmates and takes a lot of pride in doing for others. His family has attested that he's especially dedicated to them. Despite the fact that he's been behind bars, he has been there for his family and has succeeded in being a sustained, strong, positive influence. This board in the previous incarnation has previously recognized all of these positive changes that Freddie has made in his life and praised him on how far he has come. Since his last appearance before the board, it has been more of the same. Freddie has continued the positive trajectory of his rehabilitation, and if granted approval to his second term, he is ready to continue proving to this board, to his family, and to himself that he is worthy of the chance to enter society for the first time as an adult. For the purposes of this hearing, this board may authorize parole to a consecutive term under 31412B, with a finding that granting such parole is in the best interest of the state. Again, the Supreme Court has mandated that juvenile offenders are entitled to a meaningful opportunity for release based upon demonstrated maturity and rehabilitation. So taking these two standards together, this board must consider Freddie's parole request on whether or not the record shows that he has matured and been rehabilitated, and whether it is in the best interest of the state to parole a juvenile offender to a consecutive term that has demonstrated such remarkable growth as a human being. We believe that the record clearly shows that Freddie meets both of these standards. But I want to leave you with one brief anecdote that really displays the kind of man Freddie Ramon has become. As my colleague Kate mentioned earlier, some of you recall that there was an error at ABC Time Comp that would have made Freddie immediately eligible for release despite the existence of his consecutive sentence. This was the reason that this hearing was continued back in August. While some prisoners may have tried to take advantage of such an error in order to be released and return home before it was warranted, Freddie was adamant that he did not want to proceed on false pretenses. Freddie and his counsel made sure that the error was corrected because Freddie wants to earn his release through merit, and if he eventually goes home, he wants to be free and clear. He does not want some technicality to undermine the progress he has made in his life. And in this instance, Freddie chose the right path, even though it was arguably the more difficult path. He demonstrated that not only does he have high regard for actions and their consequences, but he also has integrity. His decision to correct the mistake speaks volume of his maturity and his rehabilitation, and how far a 15-year-old boy has come in 26 years. I would like to ask, if you don't have any questions for me, that Freddie be allowed to make a final statement. But before we do that, does the board have any questions for me?
The board have any questions? You guys are just getting good at this, huh?
Thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Ramon, the
yes,
board
sir.
Hearing the goal coming up to a conclusion on your case to go into discussing to make a determination as to what the board is going to recommend. On your case, sir, we want to give you the opportunity, since it's your hearing, to make any last-minute comments that you would like to make to the board, sir. Please don't repeat yourself if you can. Go ahead, sir.
To the Board of Executive Clemency, I appreciate your time. I come before you for the second time. I've been incarcerated over 26 years. I truly regret the choices that I have made at the age of 15. I live with these consequences for two-thirds of my life. These past 25 years have been emotionally trying. I truly regret that Mr. Allen Watson lost his life because of some teenagers wanted beer. I cannot imagine what his family has been through. I send my prayers to his wife and the kids. The older I became, the more I realized how precious freedom truly is. I focused on my education. I taught GED. I learned some trades and worked to focus on the future. I made a lot of mistakes in these 25 years. I make no excuses. I learned a great deal on how to become a man. It has not been easy. I have a 16-year-old daughter whom I worry about every day. I try very hard to help her focus on school. Someday, hopefully, I will see her graduate college. I would like to approach my younger sister's house, Rebecca, who has been by my side since the age of 9. She works for school district. My other sister, Vicky, has supported me as well. I hope that me being granted my parole to my consecutive number of 3.5, I look forward to someday being a productive member of society. I want one opportunity to excel as a free man. If granted parole, I will focus on some more college classes for my education. I would like to thank the Justice Project for truly believing in me, and I thank the Pro Board for giving me the opportunity to sit here before you today. Thank you.
Does the board have any questions of Mr. Ramon?
Sir, the board is going to go into discussion, Mr. Ramon. We're going to ask you to stay on the line while the board's in discussion, and we'll get back with you at the conclusion of our discussion. The board will be making a determination as to whether to grant you or deny you parole to your next consecutive sentence. So the board is now going into discussion. This is the second time that we've had this case. Actually, the first time it was a discussion or a little misconception as to whether it was for an absolute discharge, absolute parole, or to regular parole and home arrest. And due to time copying is to his next consecutive sentence, which would be a 3.5-year sentence for promoting prison contraband, which I believe happened in about 1998, okay, when this actually happened, which was some time ago. Mr. Ramon has gone through and completed a lot of classes. He's taken a lot of training that he's actually had. I am I'm agreeable to granting Mr. Ramon parole to his next consecutive sentence, but I am willing to listen to the board. Mr. Quinones.
I agree with you. I believe, considering the time he spent in the system, and of course I always like to remember that there was a victim of a violent crime, but I believe we can safely transition him to the next sentence, even taking into consideration this final sentence is 3.5 years, and again, that crime happened close to 18 or 19 years ago. I believe there's been a tremendous amount of maturing by Mr. Ramon in that interim. And again, I think we can make this safe transition.
Okay, therefore, since this situation, Mr. Ramon was incarcerated at the age of 15 years old. He has served 26 years incarcerated on his sentence. He did obtain his GED in 1993. It was in 1992 that he was actually sentenced to this 3.5-year sentence that he could be paroled to. He has since that time not only did he obtain his GED, but has taught others while incarcerated to do it. He has a long record of programming that he's actually attained since he's been incarcerated. He does have plenty of family support, although that will not he will not be released at this time. He does have plenty of family support that would do that. I hope that family continues to support Mr. Ramon as he completes his last 3.5-year sentence that he actually has. So therefore, I'm going to make the motion to grant Mr. Ramon a 412B parole to his next consecutive sentence.
And to deny
absolute discharge or regular parole.
Second.
Agreed. Okay, Mr. Ramon?
Yes, sir.
Okay, the board has voted unanimously to parole you to your next consecutive sentence, which will be a 3.5-year sentence for promoting prison contraband. That's going to conclude the hearing at this time. Mr. Ramon, I do want to thank you, sir, for taking the time and participating in your hearing today. I want to thank all of those from the Arizona Justice Project for participating in the hearing. And, of course, I want to thank your sister, Ms. Valencia, for participating in the hearing. Ms. Valencia, that is going to conclude the hearing at this time. Thank you for participating in the hearing today.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.